Howard, you mentioned the silence around empire and the U.S. relationship with small countries. You mentioned the curricular silence and the progressive silence around prisoner issues. What are some of the other silences that you see in the official story, the official history, the curriculum that was taught to you and is taught these days?
I think immigration and the treatment of immigrants has been ignored, neglected. Now, sure, there's in recent years, there's been this whole issue of illegal immigration. But the history of this country is a history of immigrants. And if the history of those immigrants were really taught in a serious way, and people saw how these immigrants, whenever they came here, in every decade, faced a retribution of some sort because they were immigrants, faced discrimination of some sort. If that history of the treatment of immigrants were known, treating them simply as cheap labor, not caring how long they worked, how hard they worked, whether they worked in sweatshops or worked on the mines, the mills, the railroads, the shabby treatment of immigrant workers all through American history, that history is not told. And if that were told, I think people would have a greater understanding of immigrants today, and I think maybe a greater compassion for the plight of immigrants today.
So let's shift gears a little bit if we can, because I want to get a question in from one of the high school students. We had a number of high school students who sent questions in. This is from Claudia Aviles, who is a junior at the Bronx Center for Science and Mathematics. Howard, first she wants you to know that you are an incredible writer and draw me into history. So you know this young woman has very good taste.
Very good taste.
And then she asks, I would like to know what you were like as a teenager. Did you do things that may have separated you from your peers in school or outside of school?
Things that may have separated me as a teenager from my peers? Well, maybe I read more. Maybe I was a little more conscious of the poverty of my parents. My parents were immigrants. Maybe that made me more conscious of immigrants and the problems of immigrants. I think reading and also, getting involved as an activist. I got involved as an activist when I was 17 years old. Going to demonstrations and looking at what the police did to demonstrators in what is supposed to be a very free country. So I had certain experiences, but I would put reading at the top of the list as something that, for instance, gave me an edge over my... I had three brothers. They didn't read as much as I did. And they're all good people, but... I went in a more activist direction.
Do you think that you carry with you anything from those early years that has influenced your approach to history teaching and activism today?
I think what I carried with me from those early years is class consciousness, the consciousness that the country is divided into a small number of very rich people and a lot of other people, the vast majority of the people who have to really struggle, and not just working people and the poor, but middle-class people, too, have to are economically insecure. I became aware, because I could see how hard my parents worked, my mother, my father. My father was a waiter. I could see how hard he worked, how his feet hurt when he came home. I could see how hard my mother worked taking care of four kids. And they didn't make any money. They didn't have anything to show for it. They had to struggle. And then I knew that there were people in the country, a small number of people in the country, who were multimillionaires. and I couldn't figure out what they did, whether they worked, or if they worked, were they contributing anything to society? So I became early on very aware that we had classes in this country. Now this, you talked earlier about what made me somewhat different. In the United States, we don't recognize that we are a class society. We act as if we're one big happy family. You know, the Constitution, the preamble to the Constitution begins with the words, we the people of the United, as if all of the people established the Constitution.
Right.
But that wasn't true, because we were a class-divided country before, during, and after the Revolution, the Constitution was not adopted by we the people. It was adopted by 55 rich white men who met in Philadelphia in 1787. So early on, I developed a consciousness of class, which stayed with me for the rest of my life, and a consciousness that there are always people who are beyond our vision, people we don't notice. So even when I became a college professor, I was conscious of the fact, oh, there are these people who clean our offices. You know, they're the buildings and grounds people. We don't pay any attention to them. Well, you know, we hardly know they exist. So I think I've been conscious of the fact that there are always people who work very hard, and they become invisible to us.
And they become invisible in the curriculum, unfortunately, and there's that silence around social class, as you point out.
Yeah, and labor movements are invisible, and, well, here teachers can chip in and tell me how much is taught about the history of labor struggles in the United States. Bill, you asked about groups of people that are invisible and things that are invisible in American history. I learned very little about the labor struggles, strikes of working people. In this country, we have had some of the most dramatic and militant and violent labor struggles in the world. And when I went to college and university, and after all, I was a history major, I got a PhD in history, and yet there were amazing things that happened in the labor movement that I never learned about. I never learned about the Ludlow Massacre, the Colorado coal strike of 1913, never learned about the Lawrence Textile strike of 1912 in Massachusetts, never learned about Mother Jones or Big Bill Haywood or Emma Goldman. I mean, now maybe more of that is taught today. I don't know.
I think it's actually not. I think not, at least not in the official curriculum, and that's one of the reasons why we began the Zen Education Project to offer teachers around the country alternatives to the official story that was being presented in textbooks, which is as silent on those kind of struggles as probably when I first began teaching, and maybe even more so because the curriculum these days seems to be more dominated by just a handful of giant multinational corporations.